And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is commentators. Each of my guests is a commentator, either in morals, business, or politics, and we're exploring each of their specialties. My next guest is the senior economics reporter for CNBC. He reports on all economic indicators and the Federal Reserve. We'll discuss whether the United States is heading into a double-dip recession after quantitative easing 2 has ended. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. And you want to keep that number handy because we'll be giving away two sandwiches or two salads from Urbane Cafe during this next segment. Steve Leisman is CNBC's senior economics reporter. Steve reports on all aspects of the economy, including the Federal Reserve and the major economic indicators. Steve joined CNBC from the Wall Street Journal, where he served as a senior economics reporter covering monetary policy, international economics, academic research, and productivity. Prior to joining the Journal in 1994, Steve was the business editor for the Moscow Times, where he was the founding business editor for the country's first English-language daily newspaper. He helped create the publication's stock index, which was the country's first. Steve holds a Master of Science degree from Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and a BA in English from the State University of New York at Buffalo. And not in his official biography, Steve is an avid fisherman and speaks Russian. Welcome to the show, Steve. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad I'm going to talk about economics and not morals. I was worried about that.
Yeah, I didn't want to put you on the spot on something that you weren't prepared for, so that's good. But let's dive into it, because these have been crazy days, both in the stock markets and in the economy as well. The stock market's down over 10% in the last 10 days, and that's worrisome for me and anybody who's invested in the stock market. Tell me, Steve, what's the market doing today? I haven't had a chance to look.
Yeah, it's been an absolutely crazy day. So we came out this morning with a decent jobs report. It wasn't fantastic. It didn't blow the doors off, but it wasn't half bad. 117,000 jobs created, 154,000 in the private sector. Market really liked that. It shot up like a couple hundred points. Then it started to worry about these persistent worries about Europe. It began to be concerned again. It sold off. It was down 200. And I was on air at about your Pacific time, so call it, it was 12:30, I guess
9:30
Pacific time, when Europe, there were, we had an announcement from Europe that the EU and Italy were close to some kind of deal about assistance over there. The market shot right back up. Now it's up 133 points. It has been an unbelievable roller coaster today, really showing how concerned the market is right now about what's going on in Europe.
Well, and as we should be, because there is that threat of contagion spilling over to the United States. But interesting that the EU announced that they're coming close to a deal with Italy.
Right.
They're going to prop up the Italian government. Maybe I'm being just a little too simplistic, but I see it here in the United States. We had quantitative easing 1 and quantitative easing 2. In Europe, they have been bolstering the economies of Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain, Ireland. They're all next to go, most likely. Am I just too simplistic when I say that the economies are being propped up by the governments today, and that that's what's keeping the stock markets in all continents at the levels that they are in? True or false?
I think that's true to an extent. I think we have had an increase in government spending. But when we look at the data, we've also seen an increase in private sector growth. The jobs numbers today were 154,000 in the private sector and minus 39,000 when it comes to the government. In fact, the government has been losing jobs for many, many months now in a row. I think it's something like 500,000 government jobs. Most of these, by the way, state and local jobs are the ones that have been laid off, as you, the state governments try to deal with their high debts and deficits. But yes, the stimulus plan, the Federal Reserve policies have played a major role in propping up the economy. The question now is, as these things either begin to be withdrawn or aren't increased, is the private sector healthy enough for the economy to stand on its own?
And that is a huge question. So where do you fall on that subject?
You know, I think what we're going to see here is we're going to see a bit of, call it withdrawal symptoms. I think we're going to have a bit of a downdraft here. I don't know how far down, but maybe we saw that, for example, in the second quarter when we got only 1.3% growth. Economists, as recently as February, were looking for 3.5% growth. So call it, round it off, call it three times the amount of growth that we actually got. And I think some of that has to do with withdrawal of government assistance. But if we can get the debt and deficit in order, which is not a small order by any means, and you saw the, what do you want to call it, the chaos that we went through, the political chaos, in just trying to do what ended up being a very modest debt deal. But if we can get that done, then at the end of the day, we can tell the markets you don't have to worry about the longer term because we've got some order surrounding how we're going to pay for our deficits and bring them down.
Well, if it was just the deficit that was weighing so heavily on everybody's mind, wouldn't it stand to reason that once we got a deficit deal in place, we'd start to see a couple of things happen? We'd start to see a sustained stock market rally because, hey, that hurdle's been passed. We're beyond that now. We'd start to see perhaps increased predictions of GDP for the balance of the year and possibly some job growth, although it's probably too early for that. We really haven't seen any of these things. So why is that? Is it just there's a lag time built into it? It takes more than 2 or 3 days for these things to start occurring? Or is there really something fundamentally wrong with the economy today?
Well, I actually have a third answer, which is kind of brings together the two questions you asked me, which is it the government propping up the stock market? In fact, it was playing a substantial role in keeping the economy going. And so I think the market's a little bit ambivalent about deficit and debt reduction. We know that they wanted a deal so the government would default. But it's a little unclear how much the market is concerned right now about the current level of the debt and the deficit. We all know 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if we don't do major reform of our entitlements, we're going to be in deep trouble. Hmm. But the sense right now, given the anemic private sector, is that it would be wrong for the government to cut back too quickly.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, because the government's involvement, Steve, in the economy is fundamental to it. But our economy in the United States is based on the consumers. Consumers drive the economy. And it's
right.
A chicken and egg conundrum that we're faced with. You mentioned the jobs report came out today. 117,000 net new jobs were created. You know, that's great. It beat the estimate, which was very low at 75,000 net new jobs. But it falls way, way short of where we need to be to replace all of the jobs that we've lost during the Great Recession. I mean, at this rate of 117,000 jobs every month coming out, it will take us years to get back to post-recession employment. Can the economy add new jobs without the consumers purchasing the products that businesses offer? And conversely, can consumers purchase the products and services without having new jobs being created to generate some income?
Well, you know, first of all, no, we're not going to have a sustained recovery without the consumer. And the thing that's plaguing the consumer most right now is their debt levels. And they're in a process now of trying to work down those debt levels and get to a place where they're more comfortable. They're also, by the way, raising their savings rates, which is another knock on spending. But it is not at the end of the day. I know this may be hard for a lot of folks to understand. It's not the jobs numbers that drive the economy. It's business spending and it's consumer spending. It is the fate of the employed and what happens with their wages that determines when we get out of recession, when we have a robust economy. And if you think about it, it makes sense because otherwise we'd perpetually be in recession. And that's not true. Now, what I want to talk about, though, is that we did have a tick down in the unemployment rate. It's 9.1%.
Mm-hmm.
There is, however, a broader measure of, call it slack in the labor market, and that's more like 16.1%. And what that counts is people who are working part-time for economic reasons, the unemployed, and people who are so discouraged with the workforce that they've really dropped out of the workforce. And so, to your point, we have to do much, much better, double, even triple the numbers that we're doing today, in order to start to make a dent in the millions of Americans who are long-term unemployed.
Now, that makes sense. My guest is Steve Liesman. He's the senior economics editor for CNBC, and we're battling about the economy. Now, Steve, on air, as recently as this week, you expressed some concerns over the expense cutting that was tied to the debt ceiling bill that we just passed, and it might have unintended consequences that come from that. And you cite Japan in the last 20 years, their malaise, as being sort of the model there, that the Japanese government imposed austerity measures and the economy in Japan slipped deeper into recession. So taking that, is it really realistic to transfer that to the United States? Assign a probability that something similar to that might happen here in the United States.
So, Bill, just by way of background, I try as best I can not to have a dog in the fight. And what I was talking about there was more, here's the debate among economists, that there's a line of thinking that one of the things Japan did was began its lost decade, which is actually now more approaching lost two decades, by doing a series of government spending programs. And then in 96, 97, it cut back and began to do deficit reduction too early. The same thing happened, by the way, in the United States in 1937, when we began and we raised taxes because we thought we were out of the woods in the Depression, and we slid back down. If you look at the unemployment rate during that time period, it ticked back up in 38 until it was really until World War II that we ultimately got out of the Depression. So there is a question about when is the appropriate time once the government comes in. Now, obviously, I want to take the other side of this and tell you that there are people who say it's absolutely wrong for the government to come back in, and they don't really buy the concept of what we call Keynesian stimulus. And what they would more prefer is that the economy essentially takes its medicine fast and early on. They believe that would hasten the recovery. I'm not sure that's right. I think the potential downturn that would have happened had the government not stepped in would have been quite a bit worse than it ended up being.
Well, my guest is Steve Leisman, and certainly we don't want to have a bad taste in our mouth after what the government is doing. And if you don't want to have a bad taste in your mouth, you may want a sandwich or a salad from Urbane Cafe. We're going to go ahead and give away that sandwich and salad right now to the fourth caller, 639-0008, 639-0008. Call in and win two sandwiches or two salads to Urbane Cafe, two locations, one in Ventura, one in Oxnard, to serve you. Now, Steve, back to you. So let's talk about this. You have the wonderful perspective of being able to talk to a lot of business leaders. You get to talk to thought leaders all the time. What is holding back employers right now from hiring more employees? Because the only places we're seeing some excitement, some hiring going on, is in oil and gas and coal exploration. That's where they're being added. So are we talking about really structural changes in employment in the United States? Have the productivity gains from the last 15 years just eliminated jobs that are going to be lost forever? Or is there a way for us to boost the employment?
Okay, so that's why they call you the brain, because those are all excellent questions, and I'm not quite sure where to start. Let me begin by saying the first thing I hear from business people is the lack of demand. That's the first thing. Probably the second thing out of their mouths is they're concerned about regulations and how much there is. The third thing we hear, and we hear this in a variety of places, it's really interesting, is a lack of skills, is that there are jobs for skilled workers. And one of the things we've seen is that, you know, survey after survey suggests that there's some sort of dislocation out there. One of the theories I can throw your way is that the housing crisis is something that's really hurt the jobs market, which
yes.
America is unique in that it has a very, very mobile workforce. You sell your house and you move to where the jobs are. Well, guess what? People can't sell their homes, or they're unwilling to because the settlement is such a loss. So that may be something that's stopping the mobility and maybe stopping skilled workers from moving to where the jobs are. Those are the kind of structural problems you're talking about. We have a 9.1% unemployment rate. The thinking among economists is that 5 or 6% is, say, the natural rate of unemployment. So what we say is we have 3 percentage points of slack in the labor market, and of that, some of that is going to be structural, which is stuff that's going to take a long time and be really hard to change. But some of it is cyclical, and it could be that if we get a decent rebound here, we could get back to 7-8%. And still have that 1 or 2% to handle on a structural basis.
Boy, I hope you're right from your words to everybody else's ears. That is amazing.
Certainly, Bill, not all of it is structural, right?
Yeah.
Some of it has to do with where we are in the business cycle.
All right. Well, that's encouraging, and that's good to know. My guest is Steve Leisman, senior economics reporter for CNBC. And, Steve, I'm going to change gears on you because you have had the privilege to interview the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, not on one but on several different occasions. How do you rate his performance over the past 3 years?
I guess I'd give him an A for effort, an A for intentions, an A for creativity, but like a C for execution and communication. So I guess he's averaging out at a B with those grades right there.
He's averaging out at a B. Now, communication is interesting that you say that, because he's the first Federal Reserve Chairman to actually hold regularly scheduled press conferences
right,
with the media like you.
He just started doing that, and I can't say that I wasn't urging that to happen on air. Several times I said that needed to happen, and he's done it. He's only done two so far. But to me, the thing that's interesting is these have been very, very complicated policies to explain. The Fed, in many ways, has gone where no Fed has gone before. And I think the Fed, probably rightly, but ultimately to its detriment, did what it had to do and worried about explaining it later. And I think it did a very poor job of explaining it. I don't think it took enough time to explain it. And I think the public was very skeptical. A lot of people think the Fed, for example, spent money in buying assets. It didn't. It effectively printed money or increased excess reserves. It's a price that we could pay later in inflationary terms, but it's not something that came directly out of taxpayers' pockets.
Mm. Yeah, and the worry of inflation is what has a lot of economists concerned about the long-term viability of the economy. My guest is Steve Leisman. Steve, I'm going to ask you to project forward on Ben Bernanke. How do you think history is going to remember Chairman Bernanke?
You know, it's one of those things, Bill, where you can't write the book till you know the ending. And certainly the story is not written here. I think he still has a chance to get out of this and for his story to be the right one. And it remains as follows. If he can end up propping up the system and getting out with reasonable growth and not having an inflation problem, then I think the things he did will be seen to have been correct. But if it ends up going south on him, both in terms of how they get out, there's still a possibility if the Fed has to exit quickly because it has an inflation problem, you could be talking about a deep recession here if that's what it has to do. I have faith that the Fed will act first to stop inflation, so I don't think that's going to be a problem. I do worry about the effects on growth if it does so. So the bottom line, Bill, is that it has to finish the job. It's got a $2.6 trillion balance sheet. It should be more like $900 billion. It has to bring that balance sheet down, has to normalize interest rates. Remember, its overnight lending rate is zero.
Right.
If it's a normal economy, it would be, I don't know, call it somewhere in the 4% to 6% range, maybe in the 3% to 6% range. There's a long way to go. It's a five-year story, but if we can see the initial march forward, then you can call it a success. But if it ends up being an inflation problem, then Bernanke will have been wrong.
Interesting. My guest is Steve Leisman, senior economics reporter for CNBC. Steve, so that brings us full circle back to the beginning. Are we going to face a double-dip recession, in your opinion?
I don't think so. I'm still holding to the story here, and today's jobs number helped that story, that we went through something of a temporary blip. We had withdrawal of some government stimulus from the economy. We had surging oil prices in the spring of this year. We had the Japanese tsunami, which basically took the world's third largest economy offline.
Mm-hmm.
And a tornado season like we've never really seen here in America. Now, those things seem to be washing out of the system, and I think over the next several months, I believe that the economy will strengthen. I don't think it's going to go gangbusters. I think it's still going to be, you know, getting back to your words, there are structural problems in the economy that need to be dealt with, things like corporate tax reform, things like a long-term deal on the deficit. You know, just getting the two parties together to solve these to agree on these spending cuts come December 23rd. Actually, I think they have to agree them by November. Huge hurdles ahead, but I think we'll wash out some of the temporary factors that got everybody really scared about a double-dip recession to get back to worrying about what I think matters, which is slower than normal growth and slower than the growth that we need to get this economy going again.
Well, that's good. We're going to end it on an upbeat note. My guest has been Steve Leisman of CNBC, senior economics reporter. Steve, if people want to learn more about you, on the internet, where would you direct them to go?
You know, I've been kind of lame about getting my act together on Facebook. There is a Facebook page. I do a lot of writing on CNBC.com, so you can find some of my pieces there, and all my videos are there. But I think your question to me tells me I better get my act together.
Well, it is the future, Steve, and that's been great. My guest has been Steve Leisman. He's truly a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest, Steve. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Take care.